Hello, this is a show from Radio. Eurogroup of stations bringing new and forgotten ways of making radio to our listeners. Each week, we give artists the challenge to make radio that works across all of Europe and beyond. Are you up for it?
In the following program, you will hear attempts made by six CFRC volunteers to capture six different neighborhoods in Kingston, Ontario.
Flying in the sky so
God's gonna trouble the water. Wade in the water. Wade in the water, children. Wade in the water. God's gonna trouble the water.
Thank you. my friend. People, they come in for coffee, but this is not the right spot. This is a hot spot. Kingston is nice, no matter where you live in Kingston. You know, 10-15 minutes, you want to go to the waterfront, you want to go to the out in the parks, anywhere, hiking, or you're there, you're not too far. We got good hospitals, I think. And we got Queens, which is a nice school for people that want to learn, mm-hmm. if they want to learn. And penitentiaries. If we go out of the line, Kingston was just Kingston. And 1958, just a year and a half before I came here, the Kingston Shopping Center was one strip stores. It was built. It was a restaurant there. Everything was downtown. SNR was there. And everything that's exposed to that. If you came down Princess Street on Friday nights or Saturday nights, you couldn't even pour an alcohol without. People were just like it. But
I didn't have the opportunity to go to school that much. I just had grade school, but
built in
those days after the Civil War.
Then
not that many could go
from
to school.
That long.
For me to go to high school, I had to walk an hour.
Came
back
in 67.
My parents
came
get me over. I was the right hand, I guess.
Kingston was smaller, maybe about 40.
My parents had the exact same pastor.
I'm sorry?
My parents had the same pastor at the time.
Where did they come from?
From Florida. Oh, my mom.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's spread.
Having to walk very far to school.
Well, people here,
they just you ask all the blind, they walk miles.
If you only knew that
transportation was
the bike was probably there.
And these people here, if you think right, you sympathize with these people more than what you sympathize with
Danish
people or New Zealand people because of the
weather conditions.
Thank you.
Try to walk up there.
I always with that. 30 below the offense, 25 or 19.
In but, you know, especially
our American ancestors, they come here, I don't like it, just 17 and 1800. What did they have? They had the roads,
a lot of Greek people,
they have toured the whole Canada,
city from city to another city.
We didn't have no electricity in 98,
didn't make it
here, 5-6 days,
and make what?
We all panicked, and we all
thought it was the end of the world.
How about all this?
I'm kidding.
What was it like during that time?
You feel strange when you first open a place and you don't know anything.
That feeling.
But we were lucky.
You get
the temperature didn't fall below 3 and 4, below 0 Celsius.
That's
so it was good work.
But
I guess
think if it went 20%.
My interest is in the living history of the neighborhood, so mainly I know about things that living people have told me. And I remember going to Sears to buy a refrigerator and trying to arrange the delivery of the refrigerator and trying to explain where McBurney Park was. And it was, well, it's hard to explain where McBurney Park is. You know, you say, okay, eventually you can figure out to say it's at the top of Patrick Street. And then the guy says, oh, you mean Skeleton Park. I used to play hockey there. And oh, yeah, you know, no problem. He knew exactly where it was. So I became aware of Skeleton Park and learned via neighbors and so on that it had been a cemetery. And so there's a lot of mythology about that cemetery, and people say, oh, it was cholera victims and it was this and that. It seems that it wasn't cholera victims and it wasn't mass graves and all that, but I'm kind of interested in those stories anyway, even if they're not true, as part of the way a neighborhood invents itself and understands the excitement of the past. Besides Skeleton Park, which was one of the first kind of pieces of local lingo that I heard, there's the term the swamp word. And what is the swamp word? Well, I suppose most narrowly, it's the streets and areas that used to be swamps. For example, where Rideau Crest home is on Rideau Street, that was a swamp. It was a swamp sort of to the north, and on the southern end of it were a bunch of oil tanks. So the swamp was kind of filled with leaked oil, and then it was filled with garbage, and then it was all kind of bulldozed over, and they built Rideau Crest Seniors Home on it. And the river was the center of the neighborhood in the past because it was a hugely industrial area and it's where everybody worked. The railroad ran along the river, and connected to the railroad were the coal yards, the locomotive works, the tile works, the tannery, Canada Steamship Lines, and all these other businesses that needed to be close to the railroad. Kids would play down by the train tracks. They had to cross the train tracks to get to the river to go swimming or skating. They would skate on barrel staves across the river to Fort Henry. They would swim in the coal docks area, which, you know, wouldn't maybe meet current standards of parenting, but it seems like most of them lived to tell the tale, and hang from the bridges so that they could see if their feet could reach the boxcars as the boxcars went underneath the bridge. I think of it as a neighborhood that is working class in its origins, that's now becoming gentrified, but is very much associated with the industry that lay along the river. And the people who worked in those industries lived, if they could afford it, as close as they could to work. So they lived around here. It went through great difficulties with the deindustrialization of the waterfront. So one by one, all those factories closed, and the shipping on the St. Lawrence was reduced greatly. So in the 60s and 70s, the neighborhood became very poor. It never was wealthy, but it was a working neighborhood before, but a lot of people lost their jobs. And the housing stock really went down in quality. A lot of the land was not owned by the residents, and I think that went back to the 30s and 40s, at least that's what we're finding so far, that at that time people didn't own their own homes. But maybe there was a consolidation, I'm speculating here, but it seems to me that there was likely that there was a consolidation of ownership, so that by the 60s and 70s there were people who owned quite a lot of property, and they were making money off maintaining it as little as possible, basically. And one notorious landlord was named Hewitt. In the 1960s, he was known for making his tenants pay an hourly rate if they wished to meet with him. And his properties on Montreal Street had rats and no hot water and holes in the walls and furnaces that didn't work and windows that were broken and so on. So that was a time also, though, that you started to see activism. And then it kind of started to go through a renaissance. It's still a very mixed neighborhood. There are a lot of low-income people, and there are starting to be more high-income people. I hope that it continues to be mixed, though. I hope it doesn't become a place that only the affluent can afford. Only the affluent can afford.
I guess your objective is to destroy the guy's rib cage, so.
Yeah.
$5 for him.
I want 10 for the reindeer because he's never ever been used. He's brand new.
Huh. And he's musical.
Musical, yeah. But he's not a toy. I have to keep telling the kids, this is not a toy.
Thank you.
There's an uneasy tension in Portsmouth. The buildings mostly date from the early 1800s. Limestone and clapboard cottages jostling for position in the field. But at the end of Mowat Avenue looms a brutalist block of flats looking like a sinister plot by Mr. Goldfinger. Erno Goldfinger. I walk south towards the Water and Gulls, over a rusting iron truss footbridge that trembles out of phase with my footfalls. Ducks and children swarm on the shores, on the rocks, and I walk further along the waterfront, looking back at the Portsmouth Harbor. The Portsmouth Harbor, with its concrete pavilion and all its dated futurism, Tron grids of windows, orange space frames, and brown plexiglass balustrades now strafed with guano. A tomb for Mayor Drapeau and his spirit of 76, and behind it lies the penitentiary, looking far less foreboding. Turning back to the path, I admire the crisp blue and white, lake and sky, sailcloth, and the towering bleached windmills off in the distance, off in the haze of Wolf Island. Farther along, I reach a disused pier, repurposed by fathers and children and teens milling in bikinis and Bermuda shorts. The sun is infernally hot and the air wraps my mouth like a damp cloth as I head northwards, up the hill, through some tall grass, through the grounds of the abandoned mental hospital. Still a stately ruin. I am already growing sunstruck as I reach the street grid and duck into a tavern for relief.
Thank you.
End of transmission. Find us on the internet, radio.fm. Over and out.